Welcome into the Install with Greg Cosell Championship Weekend Edition. Greg, we got the Final Four, one rematch from last year, and another exciting matchup on the NFC side. I'm really looking forward to talking about these games with you today.
Yeah, they should be fun. I'm looking forward to the weekend, and I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah, at this point, I mean, on the one side, a team that you're very, very familiar with, Philadelphia Eagles, no signs of rust.
No.
Coming off that that first round bye, it as complete a performance as you could have out there, Greg. And just, we've talked about that offensive line before, but Jalen Hurts, he doesn't need to worry about anybody getting near his shoulder. Nobody got close to him all day long.
You know, I was talking about this with one of my guys from the Eagles, and you know, you always hate talking like this, but it seemed that way watching the tape. It almost had the feel of a preseason game, Buck, you know, where the Eagles were playing their ones and the Giants were playing their twos. I mean, it just had that feel throughout the game. And you mentioned the offensive line. They were so dominant in this game. You know, that to me was the biggest takeaway from the game, was the play of the Eagles offensive line. Dexter Lawrence and Leonard Williams were non-factors in this game. Right. And to be able to say that, particularly since Lawrence arguably was the best defensive tackle of this given season in the NFL. I mean, a guy that's 345 pounds who played 77% of their defensive snaps. That's just remarkable what he did at that size. But those two interior D linemen were non-factors in the game. Jason Kelce was absolutely dominant, but the entire O-line was. And when your O-line is dominant like that, I'm not going to sit here and say that that makes the game easy, because nothing is easy, but it just didn't have the feel of the Eagles having to work really, really hard on the offensive side of the ball.
No, I mean, that was my kind of, I guess the word that I would use to describe it, just effortless. It seemed like
yeah.
So effortless for them on that side of the ball. And we know that they've had the best offensive line and they've been able to maintain their health throughout the course of the season, now that Lane Johnson has been back and operating at a high level. This weekend for them, though, the 49ers, Nick Bosa, Eric Armstead, Fred Warner, and Dre Greenlaw, they're playing at as high a level as any defense in the sport this year. That's going to be a really, really unique matchup for them on both sides of the ball there.
Yeah, and I think what makes it unique is Jalen Hurts. Because what they do with Jalen Hurts, with the run game dimension that he brings, and the fact that he's in the shotgun literally on every snap, so you have multiple run game dimensions, you have multiple RPO concepts, you have multiple run action concepts. It's a very difficult offense to be able to defend everything. They put a lot of defenders in conflict. And I think that the 49ers, two nickel linebackers, Warner, who I believe is the best linebacker in the league, and Dre Greenlaw, they could be the best nickel linebacking duo in the league. So those guys are going to have to play at a really, really high level, because it's linebackers who tend to be put in conflict with what the Eagles do. So I'm really fascinated to see this. I don't have any brilliant, prediction here as to what's going to happen, you know, but I think it's going to be a fascinating tactical study. You know, it's funny. A lot of people said, boy, Jalen Hurts last week played the best game of the season for him. And I'm thinking to myself, because I watch the Eagles every week, that was not even close to his best game of the season. It was highly efficient given the nature of the game, and therefore was a very good game in a playoff environment, but it wasn't anywhere close to the best overall game he's played this season.
Let's see. Something different for dinner. Searching restaurants near me.
Right here, ma'am. How can we help?
Gee, same old, same old.
Wait, we're right here, ma'am. Our restaurant's just a few blocks from you. Why is she not seeing us?
Back to the usual, I guess.
Ma'am, can you not see us?
Nope, they can't see you. Because you're buried deep in the list of local restaurants. You are invisible online. Introducing Cumulus Boost. Get a boost, get found, get on the map. Learn more at cumulusboost.com.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast, wherever you listen.
Right. You talk about tactical advantages and obviously the chess match that's going to take place between these two coaching staffs, and we'll obviously get to the Bengals and the Chiefs here in a second. But as an advantage for any tactician, Fred Warner, who you mentioned is the best linebacker in football right now, his ability in coverage, Greg, to cover ground the way that he does, it's always funny to see the commentary from players who aren't currently in the postseason talking about the things that they see on TV is the same time as we are. And I'm blanking on the rookie Jets corner.
Sauce Gardner.
Sauce Gardner was talking about Fred Warner as a defensive back playing linebacker. And I mean, the way that he covers ground is just so impressive to watch, as was evidenced by this last game that they played against the Cowboys.
Yeah, and the thing with Warner, you know, I remember watching him coming out of BYU where he played essentially slot corner as well as linebacker. In fact, at BYU, he rarely lined up as a stacked linebacker, and despite his size buck, there were questions when he came into the league as to how well he would do as a stacked linebacker. I think he's answered those questions, but the bottom line is there's no better pass coverage defender as a linebacker than Warner, and it's not just his ability to run down the seam with a CD Lamb, as everybody saw, because now everybody sees these games because it's not Sunday Ticket or Red Zone or whatever, or where you're just watching your team and you're not seeing the other teams. Now everybody's seeing the same thing. But all throughout, and I've been watching the 49ers every snap for years, Warner, even in zone, he has such a great feel for route concepts that he doesn't just drop. He drops reading the concepts and knows exactly where to go. And he gets unbelievable depth in his drops, depending on what the down and distance situation is. So there is no better pass coverage linebacker playing an underneath coverage in zone than Fred Warner. We'll see how this works. You know, I think that the Eagles would likely look at Chevarius Ward and Diamador Lenore as players they could probably attack. And I'm not saying they're beatable. You know, they may be beatable, they may not be beatable. But I would think that Ward and Lenore would be players the Eagles would feel they're going to take shots with outside the numbers, whether they're vertical shots, whether they're out routes, whether they're, you know, stop routes, whatever the route concept may be. My sense is that the Eagles will feel that they can attack those two corners outside the numbers.
Well, and it's going to be curious to see how the Eagles, we know what their rushing attack is. We know how effective it is.
Yep.
They've found the end zone 35 times this season, including the postseason. And they can, if 37 rushing touchdowns throughout the course of a season and postseason is the record held by the 1962 Green Bay Packers, according to the notes that the NFL sent out. The way that the rushing attack for Philadelphia has proven to be so effective, obviously, as you mentioned, with Hurts' ability
to critical.
Move, yep. Making it so effective and efficient. How does that matchup kind of stack up for Philadelphia against the San Francisco defense?
You know, as good as the Niners defense is and has been all throughout the season, and they are really good, you know, I think that the Eagles offense is just difficult to match up to tactically because of all the conflict, as I mentioned, that it puts defenders in, particularly second level defenders. And, you know, I'm sure the Niners will make plays. They're really good. You know, Hufanga, the safety, he's unbelievable timing as a downhill player. And not only as a blitzer when you pass, but in the run game in particular. And I'm sure he'll blow up a play here and there. But I just think this is a really difficult run game to defend. And having said that, I'm not going to sit here and suggest the Eagles are going to run for 200 yards, but I don't know if they'll be shut down. And that to me is one of the really intriguing elements of this game is that 49er run defense, which has been outstanding this year, but they're playing, you know, a team that's different than, you know, I don't have their full schedule in front of me, but even a team like the Cardinals, when they did play Kyler Murray, they don't run the same kind of offense as the Eagles do. So even though Murray has great speed and great quickness as a runner, and the Cards do have designed runs, it's not really tactically the same as the Eagles.
You mentioned, Greg, earlier the idea that, you know, now that we're away from Red Zone and everybody's watching the same games at the same time, things that more people start to notice.
Yep.
Hufanga, the safety, man. That dude is unbelievably fun to watch, and he is an absolute menace out there. Career highs this year in tackles, passes, defense, tackles for loss, and interceptions. I mean, this guy does it all for them, it seems like.
Yeah, first year as a starter. He's a second-year player. Came out of USC where I watched his tape, and I thought that he'd be really good near the line of scrimmage. Had questions as to how he would play on the back end. But when the Niners do play cover one, man coverage, 90% of the time they play cover one. He is the back end safety, and they use Gibson as the tight end matchup. That's another interesting element to this game. The Niners on third down will play more man coverage, and if they're going to play man, that would put Gibson, Tayshaun Gibson, match on Dallas Goedert, and that's another very interesting matchup. This game has so many matchups and variables, Buck, that we can all sit here and say, oh, well, this team's going to win this matchup. This team's going to win this matchup. We don't know that, first of all. But just the matchups to me are really interesting.
Oh, there's no question. And on the other side of the ball, San Francisco offensively, just what they've been able to do. And we know this about Kyle Shanahan. He's a very, very gifted play caller. He has an incredible understanding of what it is that they're trying to execute and accomplish on the field. And Brock Purdy has been able to manage things well within that system, even if this past week for the Niners looked like it was a greater emphasis on running the football than we've seen in the past couple of games for them.
Well, the one thing about Kyle Shanahan is, unless the game's out of hand and they're losing big, which rarely happens because of their defense, he stays with the run. I mean, in the first half of the game against the Cowboys, McCaffrey, Mitchell, and Samuel had 9 rushes for 25 yards. They were not running well. Now, you watch the game. In the second half, those 3 had 20 rushes. Now, 72 yards, not necessarily a big number, less than 4 yards a rush. But I think anybody watching on TV, and it was evident watching on tape as well, that they started to control the pace and tempo of the game with the run game. They didn't need 40-yard runs. They were doing a 5-yard run, a 4-yard run, a 6-yard run, a 7-yard run, a 4-yard run. So they weren't necessarily putting up big numbers, but they started to control the game. And that's what Kyle Shanahan does. He stays with the run game, and you have to defend the run throughout the game. Now, the other factor about the 49ers offense, which poses problems for defenses, is they are a heavy 21 personnel offense, Buck. They keep Kyle Juszczyk on the field as the fullback. 2 backs, 21 means 2 backs, 1 tight end. And he played throughout the regular season 33% of their offensive snaps. This past week against Dallas, he played almost 50% of their offensive snaps in 21 personnel. And all 5 of those eligible receivers, Buck, can line up anywhere in the formation. So they are incredibly multiple with their formation looks out of base offensive personnel. So what happens? Defenses, for the most part, and I'm also fascinated to see how the Eagles do this, defenses for the most part will stay base, meaning 4 defensive backs on the field. And normally in your base defense, you're nowhere near as multiple with your fronts and your coverages as you are in your sub defenses. And this is where Kyle Shanahan is so good.
Oh, absolutely. It's funny, Greg, and I'm sure, you know, this is a common experience for the untrained eye like myself, but I keep stopping the game during when the Niners are on offense to see who's in the backfield.
Right.
Who's out wide? Is it Mitchell back there? Is it Deebo Samuel? What are they doing with McCaffrey? Where is he? What kind of formation is this specifically? Like, I'm having to take it piece by piece.
No,
and make sure that I've got everything straight.
It's funny you say that, because there are certain teams on either side of the ball where with each play, I have to kind of, at the beginning of each play, say, okay, where is everybody? Fortunately, I have almost like a ticker thing at the bottom that tells me who's on the field, but it doesn't tell me where they are. So I have to kind of look and, you know, the Patriots are like that with their defense. You know, every play, it's like, okay, who's on the field and where are they? You know, and the Niners are like that with their offense. You know, each play you have to kind of say, okay, where's McCaffrey? You know, oh yeah, Debo's in the backfield. Oh, where's Kittle? Oh, Kittle split all the way out. I mean, and that's what they do. So defensively, you have to have a plan that is simple to execute, because you can't get caught up in having to communicate in detail on every single play. That's too much mental gymnastics. Then guys won't be able to play.
Yeah, no, it's a great way to put a defense in a blender really, really quick if they let them get too complicated mentally. And certainly, as you mentioned, a matchup, matchups all over the field that are going to be enjoyable to watch. On the AFC side of things, we get a rematch of last year's championship game. Unfortunately, Patrick Mahomes suffering that high ankle sprain. We're not sure what version of him we're going to get, but we know it's not going to be the best possible one. To see what the Chiefs did, though, Greg, and like the Chad Henne drive, like it's just so it's so frustrating when they can go 98 yards down the field, score a touchdown, and credit to Chad Henne for being able to execute at this stage of his career. But like just moments like that, I'm just sitting there watching that at home. I'm like, what are you supposed to do? Like, what are you supposed to do to stop them?
And it's so funny how games can change, because early in that drive in Chiefs territory, he threw a ball that got tipped that really should have been picked off.
Right.
And I'm not saying that that means Jacksonville would have won the game. But, you know, at that point, it's a close game. And who knows what would have happened. But all credit to Henne. I mean, obviously, Pacheco made the long run. They do such a great job in the red zone. You know, it seems like every time they get in the red zone, they score a touchdown. And I don't know what the numbers are. It just seems that way, you know. And there's some simple concept that is creative, but it's really simple at its core. It's just it just looks hard because they're creative getting to it. So, you know, this will be interesting because we don't know what Mahomes will be. The thing about Mahomes, you know, and I kind of made this note watching his tape this week, and I probably made the same note numerous times before, but here's what I typed. I'll read it to you. I said, one of Mahomes' traits that makes him so special when he moves out of the pocket is his vision. He sees the field with outstanding clarity, and when you combine that with his rare ability to throw from any platform, he is tough to defend as a second-reaction quarterback. And then as a corollary to that, I said, Mahomes has outstanding spatial awareness. He not only sees the field clearly, but he feels where people are in relationship to him and one another, and that makes his movement very controlled and efficient. He never looks hurried. You notice that?
Right.
When he moves, he never looks frenetic or chaotic.
No, it's the instincts married with what we've been talking about all season long with Mahomes, and obviously injury notwithstanding, just how efficiently he's operating within the system, how comfortable he is within the system. And obviously they've got weapons around him for him to be able to get the ball to and make plays. Isaiah Pacheco, as you mentioned, he had 95 yards as his playoff debut last week against the Jags. Travis Kelce was insane. 14 catches, 98 yards, 2 touchdowns. They just have so many options that they can get involved creatively. Not quite the way that the Niners do it, but in ways that maximize the efficiency of the skill players out
there. Yeah, and Kadarius Toney's becoming a big factor. He's not Debo Samuel, but he has that ability to line up anywhere in the formation, and Andy Reid is taking advantage of that. And, you know, it's really interesting because over the last, probably this season, but, you know, it's been very noticeable to me over the last 2-3 months, they play with multiple tight ends a high percentage of the time. You know, people think spread offense, Mahomes, Manny moves around, they make plays. They don't necessarily make a ton of long plays the way they did with Tyreek Hill. They're a little more sustaining in how they play, but they're playing now 40% of their snaps, give or take, with multiple tight ends, 2 tight ends, 3 tight ends. And that's really a significant part of their offense. Now, these two teams played one another week 13. We know the Bengals have beaten them 3 times. What the Bengals decided to do in that game is they matched up to the 12 and 13 personnel with nickel. They did not play base defense. They played their nickel because they're very comfortable with Mike Hilton as a run defender. You know, he's an aggressive guy. There are certain slot corners in this league that are really good against the run because of their physicality and toughness. Hilton's one. Teron Johnson from Buffalo is another. I know I'm missing some others, but, you know, Hilton is one of those guys, and they're very comfortable with Hilton playing as a slot defender versus 12 and 13 personnel.
Let's see. Something different for dinner. Searching restaurants near me.
Right here, ma'am. How can we help?
Gee, same old, same old.
Wait, we're right here. Ma'am, our restaurant's just a few blocks from you. Why is she not seeing us?
Back to the usual, I guess.
Ma'am, can you not see us?
Nope, they can't see you. Because you're buried deep in the list of local restaurants. You are invisible online. Introducing Cumulus Boost. Get a boost, get found, get on the map. Learn more at cumulusboost.com.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is that, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Oh, the name Mike Hilton still gives people hives around here locally, Greg, for what he was able to do the Titans in the 2019 playoff game between them and Cincinnati. Lou Anarumo, the defensive coordinator.
Oh, yeah.
Greg, he's somebody who's been, you know, at least more publicly discussed in the last couple of seasons now that Cincinnati's having more success. But the way that he gets these guys to play up to the level of competition, and two, the different ways that he finds to get to take advantage of those matchups, as you've said, it continues to benefit them, obviously, but it's just noticeable each and every week how well this defense works together with him coordinating.
Yeah, and I think I think what stands out when you watch their defense, they do a lot of things, but they do a lot with disguise and late movement and rotation and coverage. So the initial look before the snap is not always the look you get after the snap. That makes the quarterback work a little bit. They change the picture. One thing that has posed a problem for Mahomes, and I guess I'm surprised to some degree, because Mahomes is an incredibly smart player, and I don't think that it would pose a tactical problem. Maybe it's just one of those things. But one thing they've done a lot of is rush three, play man coverage behind it, and have two underneath zone droppers. They've done that, and they've been effective. But you're going to get different looks from them. And as I said, they change the picture from what it appears before the snap to something different after the snap. And Anarumo is good with that. He's also good with adjustments during the game. Sometimes when you watch tape, you have no idea what the adjustments are. With teams, sometimes you can see them. With the Bengals, sometimes you can really see what the adjustments are, and then they've changed some things up. And he does that throughout the course of a game.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch this game. They're always competitive. Well, I mean, certainly it's been in Cincinnati's favor, but the games are always
They've been really good games. They've just, you know, look, I don't know who's going to win on Sunday. The reality is the Bengals have won three in a row, and that's all that matters when the clock strikes zero and who has more points. But these games have been really close and competitive. It's not like they've just dominated the Chiefs.
Right. Well, and really the Jaguars, they had a couple of great opportunities to capitalize on, Greg. Obviously, the Jamal Agnew fumble really caused.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like a couple of moments where you look, and it was still a one-score game.
It was 2017, yes.
When you looked at the Jags and you're like, okay, they've had these comebacks in weeks past.
Yep.
They've been doing this consistently and just squandered a couple of critical opportunities. But it's not like the Chiefs defense necessarily had an easy time holding Jacksonville down, and this is obviously a much different challenge that they'll now have.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, now you get into that side of the ball with Burrow, and Burrow, you know, he's just a quarterback. I mean, and again, I'll explain what that means. You know, a lot of people this week, I've heard a lot of people talk about, oh, well, Mahomes is the best player in the league and Burrow is the best quarterback in the league.
I saw that.
and I understand what that means. I'm not going to get into that debate, you know, but Burrow to me is the true definition of a passer. He can throw with timing, anticipation. He can throw with pace and touch. He can throw with velocity when needed. You wouldn't call him a gun thrower, but when he has to sort of finesse some velocity, he can. And perhaps most importantly, Buck, he has really precise ball location. And he can move and manipulate defenders. He can navigate the pocket with poise and composure. I mean, he just knows how to play quarterback. And to me, that's playing quarterback. Now, there's guys who play quarterback differently in the league. Mahomes plays it differently. Mahomes is unbelievably great, too. You know, Josh Allen plays it differently. He's really, really good, too. You know, there's different ways to do it and be successful. But Burrow, he's almost in a little bit old school in the way in which he plays. But he also adds just enough movement where that can be a factor.
No, certainly. I think that's evidenced on the Jamar Chase touchdown this past weekend, where he was able to manipulate the pocket just enough, get a little, wasn't quite a jump pass, but just a little bit of a hop pass to get that ball out and get the score. Josh Allen's probably my favorite player to watch in the league right now, Greg, just because it's a little bit of insanity every time he's on the field. But there is no question that from people who truly value the precision and efficiency that quarterbacks can bring to the game when they're operating on the highest level, that Joe Burrow is tough to beat.
No question. And his sense of timing is so good, because the ball comes out, you've got to get them in third and long, however you can, because otherwise it's just, he sees it so well before the snap and he knows where to go with the football. The great quarterbacks, more often than not, and I should even say a high percentage of the time, know where they're going with the football buck before the ball snapped. You know, and even if the defense shows a change up, it's not surprising to them. It's not confusing to them. They make that mental adjustment literally on their first step in their drop, and then boom, they know where to go. Burrow's like that. He's not confused by anything. His play is rarely ever tentative or uncertain. So you need to get them into third and long, easier said than done, to where everything can't quite be as rhythmic as he likes to play and as he's so efficient at. And then ideally the pass rush for the Chiefs becomes a factor. That's ultimately the goal.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we could ask for four better teams to have in these last two, in these two championship games, and can't wait to watch them and then discuss with you the week, the next Wednesday. I think it's going to be, it's been a lot of fun every week of the regular season and throughout the course of the postseason, but these two in particular, I think, are about as good as it gets.
Yeah, I think many would say, right or wrong, at this point, that these are the four best teams remaining in the NFL right now. And I think if Buffalo had beaten Cincinnati, they would have said the same thing. But, you know, right now, Cincinnati, they won. They deserve to win. They played far better than Buffalo did. And right now, these are the two best teams. And I'm really curious to see these games. I'm very curious to see Mahomes and his ankle, because a high ankle sprain, look, I had them years and years ago, and I obviously wasn't a professional athlete and certainly didn't have the treatment available that someone like Patrick Mahomes has, but they don't go away in 3 or 4 days or a week. I mean, high ankle sprains are tough. So I'm curious to see how he's able to play with the high ankle sprain.
I've watched Ryan Tannehill have to do it twice this season.
So. When I say, of course he's going to play, I don't mean if he's able to play. You know, how does it limit his movement? Because his movement is in his DNA. He moves a lot when he doesn't need to, but he's so good at it, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a critical part of this conversation. And certainly, I'm sure, one way or the other, something we're going to be talking about the Monday after Championship Sunday. Greg, enjoy the football. Thank you for the time, as always, and we'll do it again next week.
Thanks, Buck.
House is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband
and co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.